from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A group of Oakland Public School third graders were given an assignment. Interview your parents and grandparents and record their stories about growing up in the United States or moving to this country. The local nonprofit running the project, Alice Arts, found itself with over 400 oral histories, immigrant stories from Cambodia to Africa's Gold Coast and beyond, and the resulting documentary airs on KQED on May 31st. We have a couple of representatives from Alice with us this morning, and we want to welcome them to the program. Albert Greenberg is co-artistic director of Alice Arts and joins us in studio. Just getting seated here. Good morning. We also have Helen Stultzfus with us, who is co-artistic director and co-founder of Alice Arts, which, by the way, stands for Arts and Literacy in Children's Education, and it's a performing arts production company and arts education provider. The radio documentary is called Invisible Americans, and again, it will air this Saturday, May 31st at 2 p.m. on KQED Public Radio. Well, glad to have you both here, and I should mention that this is also a cross-platform for radio, for web broadcast, and for mobile devices. And in doing some preparation for the two guests and the program, I read Oscar Hanlon, a historian who many of you out there probably know, who said, once I thought to write a history of immigrants in America, and then I discovered immigrants were American history. This kind of highlights a good deal of that statement by Hanlon. Well, good to have you both here. Helen, let me begin with you. These were mostly third graders, and essentially you brought questions to them.
Yeah. So we did something called the Ancestor Project, where we gave the teachers in Oakland Public Schools a list of questions for them to give to their children, their students, who then in turn went to their homes and sat down with their elders, which we defined as parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles. And they asked them a variety of questions. We tried to get, you know, questions that would elicit some specific examples. So, you know, what did your journey here sound like or smell like? What was your favorite childhood memory? What was your hardest job you ever did? Describe the journey coming over. Questions like that. And because it was an arts and literacy project, the children actually wrote down what the elders said. So what you have are these stories from elders, but they're filtered through a child's language, imagination, sort of the simplicity of their language. And so you get these wonderfully simple, almost haiku-like stories.
A lot of it winds up sounding like poetry, in fact.
Yeah, that's what struck me when I was going back and rereading them, and that's when I sort of realized, wait a minute, this needs a larger audience. These are gems. These are poems. Yeah.
So, Albert, by the way, name of Albert Greenberg may be familiar to many of you. He's 23 years with the Jewish Traveling Theater, and a lot of these were turned into, I mean, musical scores behind them and given a kind of artistic or dramatic resonance.
Right. Well, when Helen collected the story, she wanted to do a performance work, and I said to her, well, you can't get actors emoting Guatemala for a minute and 20 seconds and then 2 minutes of Cambodia. And so what I did was I brought native speakers into my studio because I couldn't have little kids record the stories. But I got native speakers, recorded them reading the stories. Then I scored it. And Helen took that into a rehearsal space and with dancers and aerialists. And we created a work called Burning Libraries, Stories from the New Ellis Island. Burning Libraries comes from a quote, which is, if a person dies without their story being told, that's like a library burning down. And so that was the genesis. And out of that work, we decided to create the radio program.
And you're really giving these kids a sense of their own family history and a sense of their identity. I mean, this is really wonderful project. And I think giving them a sense not only of cultural heritage and legacy, of course, you have to worry about whether some of these stories are fabricated through the years or memory has distorted them and all of that, or they get embellished or they get diminished or whatever. But I thought we'd hear some samples of them. This is a clip from a fourth grade girl. She's the daughter of Vietnamese boat people. And here she's describing how her father and his brothers crept to the river at night and fled by boat. And just a note, the story is read by an actor.
They wait until it was night. All of them had to walk barefoot, carefully and quietly to the river. They was on the boat for 2 days and ate all their food. They felt like they wanted to die.
It is. I mean, you say, almost like a haiku, just in its simplicity and in the feeling that's conveyed. There is also a real, I mean, this was done in Oakland, but you really got responses from all over the globe.
Yeah, that's what's extraordinary about Oakland and the Bay Area, but especially Oakland, the kids in these schools, they literally came from all over the world. Liberia, Yemen, Guatemala. And of course, we also included African-Americans in the story in this because they were in their own way like immigrants, which is a whole other topic, but was an interesting way for us to present the material as well.
Yeah. Well, we brought Isabel Wilkerson in to comment, who wrote The Warmth of Other
Suns. We had her on forum and has done extraordinary work just in researching the great migration from the South to the North and the West of African-Americans. It's not only, I think, a great educational tool for kids to learn about their own background, but I think, Albert, you said something at one point about wanting to give voice to the voiceless.
Well, you know, Gertrude Stein said there is no there about Oakland. She was talking about the orange groves of her childhood. But if she came to the Fruitvale neighborhood where we did this work, she would still say there's no there. She'd probably walk right past those little Cambodian kids and Vietnamese kids. And one of the principals said to me, I had no idea these kids had these stories. And I thought, why don't you ask them?
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of the kids did not know these stories. I mean, the parents had not told these stories. You know, it's that thing where the immigrant goes through enormous hardship to come here and doesn't always want to relive and rehash that. And so for a lot of these kids, it was the first time they heard their stories. I
mean, it may be even painful for the stories to be told.
Yeah. I mean, we had a kid who for a long time came in with these made-up stories, and the teacher persisted with him, and then he came in with a story of his father, you know, walking 7 days and seven nights and, you know, leaving Cambodia, leaving the Pol Pot regime, and you know, extraordinary story that, again, it just took persistence. But this kid had this amazing story.
Let's hear another cut. This is this next clip is a story that a young girl heard from her African-American grandmother who grew up in the Jim Crow South working for a white family.
My chores were to care for the baby, wash, dry, and fold clothes, mop, wash dishes, iron, wash windows, and so on. Most of the people, white, I work for saw me as a fat, black, and illiterate. I mean to work until the day is done. I mean to work until the day he is done and cease from sorrow. There'll be no tomorrow.
That, by the way, was gospel singer Deborah Flowers voicing the words of a grandmother who was a maid in the Deep South back in the 1950s, and she spontaneously broke in a song in the end there. And Albert, what's the story behind that song?
Well, you know, we'd finished recording, and I said to Deborah, is there something you could sing that would reflect this? She paused. She closed her eyes. She sang that one take. And I've got to say, you know, I juxtaposed what Deborah did to when I brought in, like the Vietnamese folks that came in to record for me, and how they deal with suffering and pain, and that we have those models. I mean, I think that's one reason Westerners are so drawn to Buddhism as a way of dealing with suffering. And then on the other end, you have this African-American experience that gave us gospel music, gave us the blues, gave us jazz. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing that you can learn from other cultures, that they will teach us, in a sense, how to access these parts of ourselves. And Deborah did that for us and does it when you hear it. How do you access that? And that the genius of African Americans to bring that to our society is incalculable, the wealth of that, to me, you know, as an artist.
So these kids learn from each other. They learn about their families. They also were able to learn, as we said, about heritage. In some instances, It was completely mysterious or almost vacant in their minds. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just listening to a little bit of your program right before this and, you know, how to talk about race. And, you know, when we start young, I mean, when these kids, when a Guatemalan kid hears the story of a Cambodian kid, you know, so it's not just about learning your own story, but when you hear about other people and you begin to see the similarities and differences, you know, that's where you begin to learn about this idea of you know, getting along with each other or empathy for the other.
Let me hear another cut. This is voiced by a young child talking about his grandmother's own childhood in Africa.
When my grandma was 8 years old, she remembers walking across the field every day. She would lie in the grass and look up into the sky and imagine being in the clouds.
Such a sweet voice, you know.
Oh,
you,
he's a beautiful kid. Yeah. That was the one kid we really brought in. He was
Kadir Scott.
Just,
yeah, he was great.
I mean, they use these advertisements. You hear them a lot on the radio and television. They get these kids to talk, you know, plaintively about the fact that foster kids, you know, need foster parents and all those sorts of things. I mean, this kid is tailor-made almost for that. it's just an adorable voice. And talk a little bit more about the reactions of these kids in terms of, you know, discovering and being enlightened about their own history, their own intergenerational connections.
I think it was a surprise for many of them, and very important in terms of their own self-esteem. I'm remembering there was, as part of we did performances of these stories, aside from this professional performance we talked about. Before that, when we were working in the schools, we would have the children share these stories with the whole school as a performance. And I remember in one of the performances, there was a group of girls who were Min, which is a minority within China. And after telling their story, they did a dance, a traditional dance. And these were girls who were completely, you know, reclusive, didn't speak English very well, did not mix with the other children, did not have very much self-esteem. And after that performance, you know, the other kids came up to them, African-American kids wanted to learn the dance, you know, suddenly they were popular, suddenly they were special. And what that did for them as children, you know, what a moment of real art can do for a child is extraordinary in terms of building that part of them.
To use Albert's word, incalculable. Helen Stolfus here in studio with us, and Albert Greenberg, they're co-artistic directors of Alice Arts, which stands for Arts and Literacy and Children's Education. Helen is the founder, and it's a performing arts production company and arts education provider. And again, the radio documentary Invisible Americans will air this Saturday, May 31st at 2 p.m. on this radio station. One more clip here. This next voice you're going to hear is of a grandmother from Caracas, Venezuela, talking about her first time in the Statue of Liberty.
I was born in Caracas, Venezuela, South America. The first time I traveled on a plane was when I went to New York. I went to the Statue of Liberty, and I went up to the torch. It was something wonderful. I felt I had never been in a place like that.
How many of the actual parents like that did you use, or the elders? Not too many, huh?
Oh, she wasn't an actual parent. No.
Yeah, they were community members.
She was community members. But.
See, we
did
collected
you use
these,
any family members?
Well, we collected these over 6 years. So at the end of 6 years, when you go back and you cull 400 stories, the stories that you're looking at by now, the kids are in high school. You don't even know where they are. You know, the kids that we interviewed, I mean, that wrote down these stories. So we actually had...
You only took about 20 of them, I guess?
We took, for the performance, we used about
30
stories out of the 400, yeah. And for this radio program, about 12. So, yeah, major culling happened.
Major culling, indeed. And speaking of culling, I'm going to invite those of you listening to join us in conversation here. You may want to respond to what you've heard, but you may also want to talk about your own experiences in terms of getting stories of parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles who came here to the United States and what it was like, in some cases hardship, obviously, and really formidable circumstances. In other cases, almost anecdotal type of stories. I mean, there's a whole range, and they follow along global lines, as they did in Oakland. And you may want to join us. And if you do, you can do now. So now our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program at that number, 866-733-6786. Or if you have questions or comments about the project itself, about Alice Arts, about the program that you'll be able to hear this Saturday on KQED, we welcome your involvement in the program. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, and you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, a number of ways, obviously, to communicate with us if you'd like to be a part of the program, including, by the way, tweeting. Our Twitter handle's at KQED Forum. A lot of these must have stood out for you. I mean, that you had a call and wound up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, definitely. I did want to point out that I think one of the unique things about these stories is that they come from people we usually never hear from. I mean, they come from what mostly in our society we call menial laborers. They're the gardeners and the nurses' aides and the, you know, the roofers and the people that we don't usually hear from. And in many cases, people who come from extremely poor backgrounds. I mean, we have quite a number of stories. And so for that reason, I think they're unique and also important because they honor those experiences.
Did this get you closer to your Mennonite roots or Albert to your Jewish roots? Or
well, my grandfather came, you know, he escaped the Tsar's army, and my mother was often hungry as a child. He died. My grandmother was left alone with seven kids during the Depression, and my uncle slept on two chairs put together. They had a real tough time. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I know people think I grew up in Westchester or something because my name's Albert Greenberg. It was the south side of Chicago on a
Which
toxic
is a
waste dump.
Tough place to grow
it
up in.
It was a tough place.
I remember when Martin Luther King went through Cicero, he said, much worse than anything I've ever marched in Mississippi or Alabama, whatever. Here's Andrew from San Francisco who writes, my mother was British but born and raised in China where her family had lived since the 1860s. And after her father died, her mother applied for a visa to come to the USA. That was delayed for years until finally her mother inquired and found that the officials thought they were ethnically Chinese and just using an Anglo-Saxon name. Suddenly it was step right this way and their visa was made. However, it was just that bit too late. They spent World War II in Santo Tomas prison camp in the Philippines because the delay meant they couldn't escape now that Japan was at war with Britain. After the war, they were able to emigrate, so my mother and her family both suffered from and benefited from 1930s to 1940s racism. For the record, my mother always loathed racism of any kind. For myself, I wish that borders didn't exist. California has benefited greatly from Vietnamese, Latino, Indian, and many other immigrant communities. Let everyone come and be welcome. Can you imagine how that would go over with some of the xenophobes among us? Let me go to our callers, and we'll begin, Sylvia, with you. Good morning.
Morning. I thought my story would be kind of an interesting parallel because my son was in college, and he went to Japan for a study abroad semester. They were asked to do almost like the exact same thing that this program did, which was to interview older relatives to find out what their experiences were. And coincidentally, he was able to do this story with great aunts and uncles at this gathering, and they told firsthand stories of how they were put into the relocation camps during World War II because of the Japanese internment problem. I mean, so at the same time that they're in camp, you know, Japan's at war, he goes back, he writes a story, puts it in a book, goes back to Japan and has to tell the story in Japan of what happened to his aunts and grandmother and uncles. And I just couldn't help but think, wow, what a teaching moment.
Amazing.
Yeah, you've had a number of those teaching moments, haven't you?
Incredible story.
Yeah, it is an incredible story. And thank you for it, Sylvia. But you've had, when we talk about teaching moments, just coming aware of the ordeals and the extraordinary exigencies of what people go through.
Yeah.
People who are here. Sylvia, we thank you for that call. I want to bring on another caller. And again, you can join us at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. And Cynthia from Berkeley, hi.
Hi. I was a social worker in the Tenderloin, and I wanted to do the same thing because there were so many stories from the families, like your t- talking about, and I just think it's going to be a great thing, and I hope it gets a lot of coverage, because there's so many amazing stories.
Cynthia, can you give us an example of one of those tenderloin stories?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of them. There's a family from Cambodia, and they were having some problems, and unfortunately, the way social services sometimes didn't understand, like once one of the kids had cupping scars on her back from this procedure they do if they get a cold or something, and they have round rings, and they called social services in. But it really was just a traditional thing. It wasn't anything that was harming the child. But that family, the father, as I got to know him, showed me a book of his family. All he had was these pictures in a book, and they lived in an apartment, nothing in the apartment. And the pictures were all his family that were murdered. Sorry, it chokes me up to talk about it. So I just think it's great to get these stories out.
Cynthia, good to hear from you, and thank you for that call. Actually, I was reminded of a story. One of your kids came up with walking, I guess it was a grandparent, walking from the Cambodia to the Thai border.
Yeah, 70.
I think one of the most, he starts that story and he says, my dad was born in the lovely land called Cambodia. I'm trying to think, would my daughter ever say I was born in the lovely land called California? She should. I mean, that's the gift that an immigrant gives us if we listen to it.
Well, and you also hear the father's voice. You know that the kid would never say that. That's what the father said when he interviewed him. You know, where were you born? I was born in the lovely land called Cambodia. And the kid wrote down what his dad said. And then you hear this extraordinary story. That's the story that I was saying the kid never told until he was finally kind of urged and pushed by his teacher. And
well, these kids find their own language.
Yeah.
In fact, I think you love that. When the kids talk about the eggs from birds?
Yeah. When my grandmother was little, she used to not have food. She needed to look in trees for eggs of birds. And I love that because that's the gift that people who don't speak perfect English give us. You know, it's like this turn of phrase. It's so much more, to me, more poetic, more beautiful than birds' eggs. The eggs of birds. It's a lovely, lovely story.
And Albert, talk about the musical score that you guys used.
Well, there's, I didn't do, for the most part, traditional music. I created a sound that would evoke the place without being derivative or trying to make Vietnamese music or create African-American music. But I did want to give a sense of the emotional life and the kind of the emotional intention behind the culture, the language, and the approach to the suffering or the joy or whatever it was that they were experiencing in the moment. So that was very important to me.
Bring another caller in here. Binta, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say, as an African-American young woman who grew up hearing many of these types of stories, it's so pivotal to have them collected, and this is going to be an oasis mentally, emotionally, and psychologically for people for many generations to come. And I want to applaud you on your work. And I also wanted to ask about what did these stories, once they were collected, were there any indications of kind of a future vision or a way that we can tap into the human potential that these stories represent? As an artist, I'm really working on that with urban gardens and working with people in San Francisco and Oakland to help to start a new food vision for mostly communities of color. I wanted to know if there are some of your vision was changed by the stories.
I just want to say that I think
Karen
I was
Salzfuss.
Yeah, Helen. That I continue to be struck by the art that children can give us, that we can learn from them, that they have a voice, and if we listen to it, if we provide a context in which that can be nurtured and presented, there is a wisdom, a simplicity, a true art that can come out of that. I just want to share very briefly one of the stories that was so striking to me, that was the kid didn't do the assignment right. He was supposed to say in complete sentences what the questions were, you know, like, where were you from? My dad was born in Texas. What job did he have? My dad did not have a job. He didn't do that. He just answered the question in very short words. So the poem story, which is so poignant that you hear in the program, is just a few lines from it. Very, very poor. No jobs. No pets. And it goes on from there. But it was like a haiku poem. It was just exquisite. And I guess what I'm trying to say to the caller is tapping the creativity of children and honoring them for the art that they are capable of doing and what we can learn from them.
And the trouble is, you've got 4% of public school kids that get the arts. Most of the kids that get them are in wealthy neighborhoods that the parents fund. And so these kids are at the mercy of the most commercial, crass culture that grabs their imaginative life. And that's a sin. And we are blowing that as a society. And it's so wrong on so many levels. I don't know how to count them all. But these kids
again, incalculable
more.
To use your word. Yeah, and let me thank Binta for her call. These kids learn a lot about their own identity. They also learn about the whole process of assimilation and acculturation, those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
We also have an arts and gardening program, and so where kids learn about traditional foods. And what that does is say where they learn to respect their cultures, where they often come in and are embarrassed and they want to go to the fast food joint and eat. And suddenly they learn and about the garden and growing and their own foods. Mm-hmm. And there's so much to this. I mean,
their foods, their music, their literature. Right.
Give them art.
Now there are foods, our music, our literature. It's something we share, we eat together, we grow together. It's such a wonderful thing to be able to do if we feed it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on all this nurturing you two are doing. And again, the radio documentary can be heard on this radio station May 31st. That's a Saturday at 2 p.m. on KQED Public Radio. Thanks to Helen Stolzfus and Albert Greenberg from Alice Arts. And thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forums produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns who are going to be leaving us, a very talented group, sad to see them go this week, but they have served well here, and we appreciate and are grateful for that. Jack Detch, Marisa Endicott, Maryam Jamil, Hannah Rose Levy, and Audrey Gertz. And let me welcome the new summer batch of interns, Leslie Chang, Kathy Shield, Hannah Kingsley Ma, Charlie Zaharoff, Eric Nygaard, and Kaylin Dakin. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.